Life Unrehearsed on CJAD 800. Brought to you by Marco Vendramini of IG Private Wealth Management. MarcoVendramini.com.
And good afternoon. Welcome to Life Unrehearsed, a show about the ins and outs of family life. So your life isn't going exactly as planned. Well, you're not alone, and we're here to help out. My name is Matt Delvecchio, specializing in life transitions, downsizing in the senior living industry.
And I'm Corey Sirota, clinical social worker and psychotherapist specializing in grief and loss.
Coming right up on the first half of today's show, hypnotherapy. Does it really work, or is it just all hype? Well, I think the naysayers will have a completely different opinion after you hear from clinical hypnotherapist David Bernstein, who's in studio with us, Corey. Going to be very interesting in talking about hypnotizing. Did you catch Bianca Andreescu, our Canadian 19-year-old, winning that U.S. Open yesterday?
It's funny that you ask me, because I so am not a tennis person, and yet there I was watching, riveted as so many others. I didn't even know how the scoring worked, and I was like, oh my God, look at her go. It was very exciting. It really was.
It was captivating. It ranks right up there with many famous Canadian events, Mike Weir winning the Masters, or even Donovan Bailey. I think it's ranked right up there. So very, very proud of Bianca. Congratulations, and for all Canadians, we're very, very proud of you. Corey, what do we have coming up on the second half?
On the second half, we're going to be talking about the importance of choosing the right activity for your child. How much is too much? What's really best for my child? Well, good news. We have Joanne Houdon Armstrong in studio. She's going to provide us with some helpful tips and advice. And that's coming up after the 4:30 news.
Yeah, looking forward to having Joanne on the show. That is after the 4:30 news. It's September 8th. Corey, I have to give a little shout out to my sister, Alana. It's her birthday today. Happy birthday, Alana, in Burlington, Ontario. I won't say the age on air, happy birthday to you. All right, let's get started. Such a fascinating topic about hypnotherapy. I'm the first to admit, Corey, that my guard is up when it comes to this subject. But the more I research it, the more I think there could be something there as a valid and effective means of therapy. Maybe I'm old school.
Yes, that's why I am.
Yeah. Thanks, Corey. That's why we have David Bernstein in studio with us. David is a clinical hypnotherapist with the National Guild of Hypnotists. And through the use of hypnosis, David helps people rid themselves of negative, unwanted behaviors and issues that impact their lives and the lives of those around them. David, welcome to Life Unrehearsed.
Well, thanks very much, Matt, Corey.
So first of all, my apologies in advance about my biased attitude about hypnotherapy, and I'm sure you see resistance a lot in your field. I think partly because people simply can't believe it, can't believe that it's happening. So maybe we need to step back first, David, and can you define hypnotherapy for us?
Hypnotherapy is simply getting people into a state of very profound rest and anxiety-free, very, very peaceful. I then divert their conscious mind with some thought, so it gets out of the way, so to speak. That leaves the subconscious mind open to suggestions, of both subliminal or direct, which allows me to instruct it to change behaviors that the person's conscious mind knows are negative, but can't do anything about because the impulse is coming from the subconscious, not the conscious.
So this is incredible because, you know, people, I probably at one point was a naysayer too, but I had the pleasure of hearing you speak. And that's ever right. Since then, I was fascinated, especially as a therapist. It's interesting the way what I learned, and it started with how you got involved in this. So can you share that?
Right. Well, I was a pain patient. I won't go into the details of why, but I had an injury. And I spent 5 years looking for help. So I went through the entire process that most people go through, you know, a lot of doctors, I also Mayo Clinic a couple of times, even to Minnesota. Just a lot of desperate attempts to heal something that was very, very profoundly impacting my life. And nothing worked. So a friend eventually mentioned hypnotherapy, which I wasn't a believer in, by the way. So I rolled my eyes like most people do. But what? Why not? So I went, and that was the answer. So my pain was really resolved very, very quickly in less than a month. He also took care of a few other things that were bothering me at the time, some phobias that I had. And that always remained with me. that I was, my life was very, very profoundly changed by this person, by this hypnotherapist, whom I'm sure you've heard of. It was Reuven Pekarvi, very well known. And it was always in the back of my mind that if the opportunity ever presented itself, that might be something that I would want to do. And years later, the opportunity presented itself, so here I am.
Wonderful. It's clinical hypnotherapist David Bernstein talking to us about the fascinating field of hypnotherapy. You you talked about two right there in terms of pain management and phobias. I'd like to talk about the type of clients that would be ideal for hypnotherapy, if there is such a thing, because I think there's two aspects. What to cure, if you will, or what is the issue, and also the type of person that would be accepting. So let's start with typical clients that would come see you, David. What would they be seeing you for?
Most people will see me for a combination of things. People don't call me really for one thing. Usually anxiety and stress, very high on the list. Those are two things that it seems that everyone these days is suffering from to one degree or another. And that, and in a way, stress is normal. But when it comes to be a very, very high degree of it, and it's impacting the person to a great deal, it causes other things. It can cause migraines, insomnia, aches and pains. I've seen people who have ground their teeth down to stumps. Their relationships suffer not only at home, but at the office with their colleagues. They become very, very tight and very, very tense. Neck, shoulders, everything's hurting them, and they're on hair trigger emotionally. So any little thing bothers them. So it's really a gamut of all things that can cause other things. So you have to sit down, which is why I have a consultation initially with each client, and we talk for an hour about exactly what's going on. And they may have called me for one thing, but as they talk, they go, oh, yeah, by the way, and this is affected, and I can't fly, and I'm yelling at my kids, and it just goes on and on. And my job is to figure out why there is this core of stress or anxiety, if that's what it is, and turn that off so that everything else disappears.
Right.
I don't necessarily have to look at eight or nine things that the person may be complaining about if I can see from the consultation that they have an anxiety or stress disorder. In which case, you turn that off. Everything else should take care of itself.
So how does one train to become a hypnotherapist?
I went to the Montreal Hypnosis Center. It's not far from here. It's on St. Catherine, believe it or not. And an excellent instructor, Ariel Shirker. She's a master hypnotherapy instructor, hypnosis instructor. Very, very intensive. It doesn't really take very long. It's only about 100 hours, I believe, or 110 hours originally. Plus, there's another 20 or 25 hours of testing. So really, it's not that intensive from a book learning sense. But whether you can do it or not is what you have to find out after by working with it and trying it.
David Bernstein, clinical hypnotherapist, telling about the process to become one. And we're going to talk a little bit about techniques, David. I envision what you see on TV.
That's
and
right.
You've got a group of people and they're all falling asleep and you're
look
making them do crazy, crazy things. Yeah. And but the reality is, I think, David, give us an example of some of the techniques you use. I believe it's mostly individual therapy. So explain some of the techniques.
It's always individual. And what you're describing is the confusion that people have between stage hypnosis and clinical hypnotherapy. Because the first thing a person thinks about when you say hypnosis is some guy up on a stage with people barking like dogs, or this one thinks he's a mailbox, and this one, you know, that kind of stuff, which is entertainment.
Right.
Nothing wrong with it. It's amazing. It really is. But clinical hypnotherapy is the opposite of that. Very serious use of the same types of mechanisms, but to get people to get on with their lives without having whatever the issue is bothering them. So my technique is every session is about 10 minutes of relaxation. I walk people through it. It doesn't take very long. It's eliminating the adrenaline and the cortisol essentially from the person's system. elevating other hormones, melatonin, serotonin, and endorphins, putting them into a very quiet state, and then I go to work working on their issue.
And we're going to hear a few more of those techniques, and we're going to head out to traffic, David, but you're also going to give us an example of a client where you quite literally changed their life. But first, let's head out to Lauren Glazer at the CJD Traffic Center for a traffic update.
Live Fun Rehearsed on CJAD 800. Brought to you by Marco Vendramini of IG Private Wealth Management. MarcoVendramini.com.
Welcome back to Life Unrehearsed. I'm Corey Serota with my co-host Matt Delvecchio, and we are talking to clinical hypnotherapist David Bernstein about the power of hypnotherapy. David, I want to hear an example of when a client, you work with a client and literally change their life.
Well, one that comes to mind is several years ago, a woman came to me with something I had never actually heard of. It was called emathophobia. And it's a fear of dust. Now, this is very unusual, so it's one that that always pops to mind. So people would say, so she's afraid of dust, so what? But dust is everywhere. Mm-hmm. So it didn't hit home for me either at first until she started telling me how she lives because of the fear. The blinds in her house sewn together so that the sunlight doesn't come through so that she won't see the dust motes.
Wow.
Spick and span in the apartment, no dust allowed. And if she would ever have to go out, let's say, to a doctor's appointment, she would put on those wraparound dark glasses so that she couldn't see any dust or try to keep her eyes closed. And she was essentially a prisoner in her home for a couple of decades, actually. She was in her late 60s or early 70s when she came to see me. And this had been going on for perhaps 20 years. So she was a prisoner. So I saw her three or four times, and I got her subconscious mind to very slowly transition away from the fact that dust is a threat of some kind. And I used, if you recall, I don't know if you're old enough. Walt Disney on Sunday nights, there was a fairy over his castle. And the fairy had a wand, and she used the wand to sprinkle stars over the castle. So I got her subconscious mind to associate more to those harmless fairy stars than to dust. And slowly, over a period of a few weeks, her fear essentially melted away. And to this day, she's fine.
Amazing story. That's literally life-changing, like you say. It's clinical hypnotherapist David Bernstein saving people's lives here, quite literally. David, before we head out to traffic also, we talked about some of the techniques, and you talked about, the stage and the theater, and that's not really what your day-to-day life is.
Right.
So explain some of the techniques that you would typically use.
Well, people come to see me, obviously, for various serious things. And the subconscious mind is not like the conscious mind. So I can't just talk to them and tell them, well, don't do that. You can't, it doesn't work. So the subconscious mind works more on imagery than words. So, and I write out new programs for everybody. I try not to repeat from client to client because everyone's different. I use imagery to replace the reality of what their conscious mind is afraid of to teach their subconscious mind through, let's say, a visualization of a wall as being tense. Or I'll use one I use quite often, actually, is a barking dog next door when you're outside in your backyard on a very nice, peaceful day, because you're focusing on that barking dog and it becomes a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to ignore the barking dog and let the barking just travel right through your body, and the way I do that is I have the person understand that their body is no longer solid. It's made out of a mesh kind of a fabric or some type of a screen door or a sieve, so that the sound of the dog loses its intensity and the sharpness of it. It fades away into the background, and it teaches their subconscious that it has the ability to do that. So a few weeks down the road, not a barking dog, but whatever the problem is with the person, their barking boss, maybe, that's giving them difficulty, causing their stress. They use that technique subconsciously. They don't have to practice. There's no homework. There's nothing like that because it's a subconscious adjustment. And they find that even though they're not consciously aware of trying to do anything, that it's just not bothering them because I've made that connection and association subconsciously.
So fascinating yet again. I told you. Are we converting you, Matt? Fascinating again. I'm wondering where resistance fits into all of this.
Well, about 10% of the population, it's said, are not hypnotizable. And why, we don't know. Maybe they're just wired differently, or maybe they are highly resistant because there's no test. I can't have someone in my office and give them a test to find out if they're hypnotizable or not. You have to try it. But I haven't found that it's 10%. I think it's more like 5 or 6. It doesn't happen very often. But maybe that's because when people are coming to see me, they're already committed to it. They haven't called me for no reason. They've done their research, or they've been referred to me by somebody, or, you know, they know that, and they have faith in it, and they've heard of me, and, you know, they've done their research. So really, I would have to say 100% of the people who call me originally are already believers.
Right.
So maybe my numbers are skewed because everyone who comes to see me is 100%. I run into somebody occasionally that I can't hypnotize, but that's not their fault. We don't know why. So to answer your question, there's very little resistance because I don't see those people.
It really is interesting talking to David Bernstein, clinical hypnotherapist. I would also assume, David, that maybe you brought up a very good point. They're coming to you already. They're ready.
Right.
There's probably a whole bunch of people that don't want to go to you because they're simply afraid of what might happen. They don't actually want to let their bodies go to that next level.
Right.
Do you run into that?
Well, I run into that when a spouse or a relative or a friend brings me someone.
Fair enough.
Okay, and the person doesn't want to necessarily be there. So that's what the consultation's about. I mean, you know, we pick each other's brains. They're interviewing me just as much as I'm interviewing them. So, you know, but 9 times out of 10, or even 9.5 times out of 10, at the end of the consultation, they're ready to
do
it.
Ready to go. Wonderful. Fascinating stuff, Corey.
Yeah.
It's David, I have to say, I was a certain non-believer, but it makes sense because I had the visualization of the stage and the group.
That's
but
what
you're,
I think.
You're talking about therapeutic work one-on-one where it makes a lot of sense. And we got barking dogs on each corner of my house. I'm going to start using that with the barking bosses. I like that analogy as well. David, you've been very helpful. Hopefully some of our listeners really enjoyed what you had to say. How can people get a hold of you?
I'm at davidbhypnosis.com. That's my website. 514-249-1907. I'm in Point Clear.
Thank you so much, Dave. So interesting.
Pleasure.
I knew you would be, and you did not disappoint.
No.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Let me tell you, coming up on Life Unrehearsed, the importance of choosing the right activity for your child. How much is too much? What's best for my child? Well, Joanne Houdon Armstrong in studio will provide us with some helpful tips and advice. That's coming up after the 4:30 news.
Life Unrehearsed on CJAD 800, brought to you by Marco Vendramini of IG Private Wealth Management, marcovendramini.com.
And welcome back to Life Unrehearsed. My name is Matt Delvecchio, specializing in life transitions, downsizing in the senior living industry.
And I'm Corey Sirota, clinical social worker and psychotherapist specializing in grief and loss.
Corey, before we start with Joanne here and activities for your kids, I'm going to refer to as a superstar. You are doing a TEDx talk coming up. What's that? In another, how long?
It's a month. I think it's a month from yesterday.
Good for you.
Craziness. Lots of fun. Lots of little jitters, but definitely a bucket list item. So we will, actually, I'm going to post on our Facebook Life Unrehearsed page the interview I just did about the upcoming talk. Myself and another presenter were interviewed, as many of the TEDx Laval people are. It's bucket list thing. I want to be able to educate. It's about this show. It's about anything we can do to get information out. For me, it's about grief and loss and how to help people navigate that a little better.
So good. So good. Way to go. Very proud of you. And another month away. We'll have more about that in future shows.
Thanks so
All right.
Much.
What do we got coming up?
Coming up, choosing the right activity for your child. As school starts, parents want to choose activities which are going to nurture and build their child's confidence. That makes sense. But what should we really be looking for? How much is too much? Well, I am very pleased to say we have Joanne Houdon Armstrong. She's a mom first and foremost, and the owner of Stagecoach Performing Arts. Seems to be a jack of lots of trades.
That's for
and
sure.
We managed to get her to sneak away and have some time here. So welcome to the show, Joanne.
Thank you.
Let's start off right away with a question around the importance of choosing an activity that's going to nurture your child's confidence. What do we look for? What do we do?
Yep, and we all know it's the start of the year, so the kids are settled in school, so now parents are starting to look for those who don't have a regular activity, and for those who are entering, like the age of 4 to 6, where they haven't done an activity yet, and they're looking, it can be a little overwhelming, because, you know, you don't want to try and keep up with the Joneses, you want to make sure that you're doing what's right for your child, for you know, which is the most important thing. And there's so many to choose from, there's so many activities, how much is too much, how little is not enough, and between sports, arts, should it be recreational, no, should it be competitive, should it be something that, you know, we're going to add as a supplement to something else. So there's a lot of factors to consider in choosing activities, but... You know, like I always say to parents, you know, offer your child the best option that for them that's going to nurture their confidence and, you know, make them strong, resilient children. Because that's what we aim at in the long run. That's what we all want for our children. Parents all over the world want the same. So you want to find a balance in all this.
That's Joanne Houdon Armstrong talking about choosing the right activities. And you mentioned a few things. There are so many activities. There are situations, though, where I see personally firsthand some children more at the elite level that they're focusing on one activity almost 12 months a year now. It could be hockey. It could be dance. It could be performing arts. It could be many things. Joanne, what's your view on that? Because I think there's more and more studies showing you need to mix it up, even if you are at the elite level. What's the importance of trying various activities?
Yeah, it's actually a good point, especially now in the recent years. It has studies have come up to show that, you know, even if you are an athlete dedicating your time to one sport, it is important that you learn other sports because other skills will be gained from those sports. So overall, you become a better athlete. We're talking about sports here in general, but it's the same thing in the arts as well. So, and it's hard to find a balance. Like if you're dedicating yourself to one sport and you put all your eggs in that basket and something does happen and, you know, we all know the stress that comes and the anxiety that can come with competitiveness in sports. And sometimes that can put, you know, some of the children off the sports altogether. So by balancing the act and having many eggs in your basket, you can turn to another if one doesn't go so good. Yes, of course, you want to, you know, if you're playing at elite level, you want to be committed to that. Of course, there's a commitment level expected in sports. As a coach myself, I know and I'm aware of that. But we also want to encourage, you know, I coach girls, so we want to encourage them. If you play hockey, I will ask, how's the hockey tryouts going? How did it go? You know, we did miss you at the practice, however, I'm happy that this is going good for you. And we want to encourage that. And it's the same thing in the arts, you know, we want them to dedicate to their crafts. But at the same time, if they want to do 2 or 3, you know, different activities, we're good with that too, because they're gaining from that. And overall, it becomes a more balanced child where there is no pressure. Everyone is happy with what they've decided to do. It's hard for them. They're put on the spot to choose, you know, between one sport or one activity, but they don't want to choose because they have friends in, you know, both sets of, and they understand.
That's Joanne Houdon Armstrong. She's talking about choosing the right activity for your children here on Life Unrehearsed. I hear you. We need to mix it up. We need to get different skills from different places. How do you know, though, even when they're doing one activity or they're doing 10 activities, what's the marker of what's too much?
Well, they'll tell you. Children, I always turn to them. You know, when,
well, duh.
when a parent speaks to me, sometimes they'll say they speak on the behalf of the students or the player or whoever it may be. And I'll say, if it's okay, I will ask them too. Let's get them involved in the conversation. Children know themselves. They understand their own level of anxiety that they can deal with. And sometimes they can't really express it as well. But they'll tell you. They'll tell us. And you'll know because they feel stressed from one activity and they don't want to go to it. It's always finding the balance of the right stress level you want to put them under too. Finding like, yes, I'm going to I want you to pursue that activity because I find it stretched into your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. It stretched you out of it a little bit, but enough that I know you can cope with that stress. And you have these conversations with them. I have them with my daughter often, you know, right. to say like, you know what? I think you should go for a bigger role this year. I think you can handle it. I think you've been doing this for a few years now. And she'll tell, yes, you know what? I'm going to audition for something a bit bigger this year. And I said, good for you. It's a little more stressful, but the right. reward is better and you'll be more resilient at the end of the process.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about listening to your kids. And mm-hmm. I think that's such an important point. The bigger challenge will be, will the parent actually listen? You know, because maybe they have dreams and aspirations and it might not be the case. You know, we've talked a little bit about sports, Joanne. You are the owner of Stagecoach Performing Arts, a wonderful performing arts worldwide. And you have a couple studios here in Montreal. So let's focus a little bit on Performance Arts Studio. My niece, my goddaughter, was a little bit into sports, but much more into the dance and arts and so on. This was her, what appealed to her. We're seeing more and more kids doing this, aren't we? And why are we seeing a bit of a shift to performing arts, maybe even out of sports?
And luckily enough, this is something I discovered as a Stagecoach owner. I brought this franchise here because I saw my daughter was very creative and artistic, and I love that. I had a strong sport background in sports, and I really saw it, and I thought, oh, this is beautiful. And I knew about Stagecoach from England, and I brought it here. And I find that the life skill that it gives those children are just essential, and especially now with technology and, you know, our children turning mm-hmm. to iPads and other devices right. that it may be to socially interact with others. I find that the performing arts gives them the essential, like, skills that they need for later on in life and for now. And, you know, we all know that IQ is now such an important factor, and this is what you get from performing art. You know, you'll get this, and you also get teamwork. You also get other, you know, aspect that you would get in sports, but you get them in the arts too. I find it wonderful. I see children every week. They're thriving through the program, and you can see their confidence level going up. They've gone from not wanting to come in at all into the class to running in and say to their group of friends, and they're on stage, and they're, you know, Aaron, the teacher here with us, does all the wonderful work in the classroom, and you see it in children. And I love, this is my number one thing mm-hmm. that I get from this, is the parent that comes and thank me for what they've been able to do on stage with their children.
That's terrific. I'm sure not everybody has to be on the not everybody's the main actress or actor in the performance, but there's always a role for everybody. That's sort of what I've seen because I have a theater daughter as well. So I love that. We have to go out to traffic, but I do want to ask you when we come back, what about the kid who doesn't want to do anything?
Oh,
let's talk about that. So we'll hear your answer right after we hear from Lauren Glazer at the CJA Traffic Center.
Live Fun Rehearsed on CJAD 800. Brought to you by Marco Vendramini of IG Private Wealth Management. MarcoVendramini.com.
Here I am dancing again. Enough is enough. Welcome back to Life Unrehearsed. I'm Corey Serrato with my co-host, Matt Delvecchio. And we are talking about choosing the right activities for your child with Joanne Udon Armstrong, owner of Stagecoach Performing Arts. I have a couple of questions. So first, we're talking about choosing the right activity, but what about the child who doesn't want to do anything? And before you answer that, also the one that starts something and then wants to quit. What do you recommend parents do?
Okay, so I was actually speaking to a mom today. These always wind up being interesting and long conversation because I want to make sure that the parent gets the enough to work with. But so let's answer the first question. The child that doesn't want to do anything. So that tells me two things. Either he's giving the choice to stay home and be on the iPad without judgment here. I'm just, mm-hmm. you know. So of course, sometimes
you could be with judgment. There's a lot of parents that want them off the iPads.
So sometimes they will choose this, right? If I tell my mom I don't want to do anything, maybe I'll just wind up doing nothing while she goes grocery shopping. Life is good. I'm not stretched out of my comfort zone. There's no stress in my life. I'm just at home on my iPad. So I always tell the parents, what are the other options that you're giving your child here? Mm-hmm. Then they're like, oh, wait, well, I didn't give an option. He doesn't want to do anything. Okay, so then in that case, I would say, no, you need to choose. You give him options of where, you know, you feel it would be a good activity. Right. You want to choose an activity, of course, that's not too stressful, that's going to make them want to go, and that's fun. And if you know that it's a safe and positive experience, you leave them there. They do something. Okay, so it's always a question of options. With children, you always give them choices. I don't want to be giving you parenting tips here. But I find it works for me. If somebody doesn't want to do anything, I give them 3 options and 5 seconds to make a decision. And then they can choose. Like, I'm not saying you're not doing anything. I'm not forcing you. I'm just helping you making a choice between those 3 options. So that kind of answers that. So I always tell parents, you know, if you don't give them anything to work with and to choose, they're not going to choose anything for sure. Mm-hmm. So then the child rules the house, and then they'll wind up choosing other stuff and other aspects as they grow older, right?
Right.
And the other one is, you know, my child wants to quit your program again. Okay, no problems. What are the options? What is he going to do? Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know, nothing. No, that can't be. I don't mind if you leave Stagecoach. I understand this is not for you, maybe. But there's got to be another activity that you're going to fill that space with to make sure that your child keeps being engaged, is learning on the weekend, in a, you know, in a fun environment, of course. And I don't always want to, of course, I'll question why does he want to leave? Right. You know, why does she want to leave? Just to find out what it's about. It could be that they are stressed about the stage. It could be that they had a stressful experience the last class because we stretched them out of their comfort zone a little too much. Mm-hmm. So we say, you know what, let's speak to her. Let's speak to him. If that's the case, they can come back because this is a safe, fun environment to learn. They're going to be okay. We're going to fix this. Now that we understand what the boundaries are in the comfort zone, we'll make sure we don't overstretch. Mm-hmm. And in the arts, that's what you said earlier, there's room for everybody. If you're good on stage and you're naturally talented, great. This is, you're going to love this. If you're shy, it's okay to take the third row and the second row in a singing class. I'm all good. As long as you move forward, you know, and in within a few weeks, you're stepping forward and you're coming out of your shell a little bit. So, you don't want your child to quit an activity in a fast-paced decision. You really want to think about it. You want to have conversation and always give them options.
That's Joanne Hudon Armstrong. We need more people like you, Joanne, because you are open to it. You're encouraging communication. There's always a reason for perhaps their stress and anxiety, but you are opening that up to parents. I think at the end of the day, much better than being on the iPad all day, but you need to dig a little deeper, both from the parents' perspective and the kids' perspective. And I have to say, you know, you are the owner of Stagecoach Performing Arts. That is not just your life. You are involved in so many things, Joanne. You're a soccer mom, first and foremost. Congratulations. Huge soccer tournament win in Granby with you
yes,
and the kids.
Thank you so much.
So you bring sports to it. You bring the performing arts, but you are also a community leader. And I want to do a shout out to you because you are involved in so many different community events, including the floods. I don't know if you've seen on Facebook and Instagram. Well, the person behind the scenes was Joanne, organizing all these volunteers and tireless hours on her dime, mind you. And so I just want to thank you, Joanne, because there's so much more than just the Stagecoach and soccer mom. That being said, I want to bring someone else into the studio here. She is your singing teacher at Stagecoach Performing Arts. We have Erin Berger in studio with us. And Erin, we're going to bring you in because Stagecoach is very proud to be a recipient of a Guinness Book of World Records. So, Erin, yes. Could you tell us more a little bit about this? And if you are looking on Facebook Live, we've got the actual Guinness Book of World Records being shown in front of the camera now.
Absolutely, tell us about it. Yeah. So it was a worldwide initiative from Stagecoach UK to celebrate their 30th anniversary. And the play that was selected was Beauty and the Beast Jr. And the goal was to see how many simultaneous performances of one show could we get going across the world. And I'm happy to say that us over here in our little corner of Montreal, we were successful and we performed on July 1st, 2018. We got our whole group of kids performing and were part of something really special. When they received their certificates, they couldn't believe it. The smiles on their faces. We did it. We did it. And it was so great to see that all their hard work led to that.
So your kids are performing at the exact same time as 73 other stagecoaches around the world. exact same
There were actually 112 applications put in, but only 73 were deemed successful. So there was a very strict guideline that everybody had to meet, and we were fortunate enough to meet that guideline. And now the kids can say, hey, look at what I accomplished. Look what all my hard work has led to. So it was a really, really great opportunity for all the kids.
And it's the real deal. The Guinness Book of World Records official in the books.
It is in the books.
Very good. No, thank you so much. I mean, and congratulations. That's a huge undertaking. I'm sure the kids were very, very proud. Yeah. Joanne and Aaron, we really appreciate you coming in into studio, telling us, and I think all of us, all listeners, we need to encourage the kids for these activities. Mix it up a little bit and communicate with them if that's the message that was out there. And if they're not liking it, they're going to tell you, but try to find out the reasons why behind it. So thank you. How can people get a hold of you, Joanne?
In various ways on our website at stagecoachschools.ca. You can select the Quebec one. And on Facebook at École des Arts Stagecoach.
Thank you so much. So interesting and way to build people's confidence in so many ways. Such a pleasure chatting with both of you. Coming up next week on Life Unrehearsed, we'll be speaking to the dynamic Terry Linder. He will be in New York City in a few weeks receiving an award for being in the top 100 under 40 most influential people of African descent.
Wow.
Yeah, very happy to have Terry in studio next week. Just a really dynamic individual and so glad to have him. And you know what, Corey? It's World Alzheimer's Day at the end of this month. And talk about guests that we're very proud to have in studio. We're going to be speaking to world-renowned researcher on Alzheimer's disease, Dr. Serge Gauthier. He'll be in studio. He's actually in Asia, just coming back from a speaking tour. Looking forward to him on enlightening us about this very difficult disease. That's next week on Life Unrehearsed, where you can catch us every Sunday at 4 p.m. on CJD 800.